And now a highlight of Sunday television becomes a highlight on monitor, the American form of the air. And tonight, well, you pay your money and you take your choice. Leonard Hall, chairman of the Republican National Committee, meets face-to-face with Paul Butler, chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Earlier today, these two gentlemen met in a Washington television studio. Monitor was watching and recording. And we're able to bring this program to you now, just as it took place before the television cameras. Here now is the moderator of the American Forum of the Air, Stephen McCormick.
This program marks the 28th anniversary of the American Forum. Our special guests today are the men who lead the two major political parties of our nation, Paul Butler, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and Leonard Hall, chairman of the Republican National Committee. In this important election year of 1956, the American Forum celebrates 28 years of presenting discussions of the vital issues of our times. May we express our appreciation to the radio and television audiences for their gratifying interest. On behalf of the National Broadcasting Company and Theodore Granick, founder and producer of the American Forum, we pledge ourselves to continued service through public discussion. Well, gentlemen, a year ago you both appeared in this program. What has happened in that 1 year to convince you that your party will win in 56? Mr. Butler, suppose you start.
Well, first, Mr. McCormick, I'd like to extend our greetings and congratulations to Ted Granick and the National Broadcasting Company on the occasion of this 28th anniversary of American Forum. Certainly, it's a great institution and one dedicated to the enlightenment and education and information of the American people in great problems that confront them. Now to your interesting question. I think that on June 5th of last year, Mr. Hall and I appeared on this same program in a debate. And I said then that I thought that the American people would turn to the Democratic Party in 1956 because they wanted a change. And I think that the conditions that existed then have been intensified and multiplied, and that the demand on the part of the American people for a new administration concerned with the interests of all the people is even greater today. Big business has been getting bigger. Small business is fast disappearing from the economic scene in our country. There is constant squabbling among the military sections of our Defense Department, and apparently there is no control or supervision over these important...
We'll be back to you in just a moment to continue, but first, Mr. Hall, your comment on that question.
May I, too, add my congratulations to you, Steve, and to Mr. Granick. It's nice to be here again today. 1952, the people overwhelmingly elected Dwight D. Eisenhower president because they were tired of what they were getting. They have enjoyed 3.5 years, which could be contrasted with any 3.5 years under Democratic control in the history of the country. We have a prosperity and a peace, something we never had under Democratic administration. I think in 1952, the people elected Dwight D. Eisenhower because they thought he was the best man fitted to lead this nation and to lead the world to peace. He has not disappointed them. He is still working hard for peace. The people trust him, and in my opinion, they're going to reelect him again by an overwhelming majority this fall.
Well, Mr. Hall, that takes care of your opening statement. Now to continue, I can see we don't completely agree here, to put it mildly. Mr. Butler? Shall we start with the public opinion battle now taking place in the Pentagon regarding the election? Or do you feel that is a real important issue from your point of view this year?
You say that feuding in the Pentagon Department certainly is an important issue, I think, the American people. I think the American people are concerned when the departments of government under the leadership of a president do not indicate a cooperation and a coordination of effort in the common good. And as I wanted to say further, the situation that has existed since 1953, the farm crisis is growing worse.
There's
no help from the administration.
Are we going to take up all the issues at one time?
Let's take them one at a time, if we may. I know we only have a half hour, but we'll try our best to do that.
I served up in Congress for 14 years, and apparently Mr. Butler has a short memory. I recall back only a few years ago when we had a Pentagon battle, too, when the Democrats were in control. I don't consider that too unhealthy, as the president says. He hopes they will express their opinion. The main thing is, have we a good defense today? Is our defense preparation in order? And Admiral Radford says we're in the best condition we have been in his time in the service. To my mind, that's the important thing, not whether there is a slight disagreement as to whether this arm of the service or the other arm should have the emphasis placed on it.
Mr. Butler.
I think it's very important because your 1952 Republican platform, Mr. Hall, promised, and I quote directly, "We shall review our entire preparedness program and we shall strip it clean of conflict between the services."
Well,
and I say to you, there's a total failure on the part of this administration to strip it clean of conflict.
May I say this, Paul? I became a second lieutenant in Plattsburgh back in 1923, and I don't intend to say that I'm an expert on what should be happen so far as preparedness is concerned, but I really do believe that the President, past General Eisenhower, will have more respect for his opinion on what is preparedness rather than the opinions, I might say, of General Butler or General Symington.
Well, what about General LeMay while we're talking about that and his grave concern that he's expressed in hearings before the Congress and the testimony that was revealed yesterday from the committee under Senator Symington about the situation where Russia is on the way to completely surpassing the United States in air power and particularly in the important field of the intercontinental ballistic missiles?
In my opinion, President Eisenhower will never let this nation be unprepared. And, Paul, again, you have a short memory. I recall back again just before the Korean War, and I believe just before that time that Mr. Symington was also in charge of the arm air of our services. And it's a recorded history that when we got into the Korean War, we had about 30 planes over there propeller-driven. We had about 8 Pershing tanks. We didn't have one combat force of Marines. In other words, when you had control, you didn't have anything to fight with when we got into trouble. Today, we have something to defend ourselves with, and I believe what Admiral Radford said, and I think the people, I repeat, will believe President Eisenhower.
Now, are you saying that in the World War II that we didn't have the means to defend ourselves
I talked about
half of the world?
I talked about the Korean War. And
certainly about the Korean War. And you were in the Congress then.
You were
one of the men who voted to dismantle our military.
I did not. I think you will look back and you will find that Mr. Johnson recommended to Mr. Truman, and Mr. Truman followed his recommendation. I think you'll find, too, Paul, it was about that time that Mr. Truman said, "Well, old Joe Stalin's a good man. I can get along with him." It's about that time, too, that Mr. Truman said, "We're closer to peace than at any time in the last 25 years. And I think 20 or 26 days after he said that, we had war in Korea and with no preparation for it whatsoever. So I believe the American people won't take the word of those who were in charge at that time as to what is preparedness in this country.
Well, gentlemen, with many things to talk about in this half hour, may I ask you this?
In spite of the pledges toward a clean campaign we've read about, can the campaign be kept free of mudslinging? Mr. Butler?
Well, I think it can if we don't have any men running around the country calling the other party the party of treason and referring to traitorous conduct on the part of men like Harry Truman and Dean Acheson, who was Secretary of State.
Who prepares all those cards for you, Paul?
Nothing on these cards about that, Mr. Hall. What about your cards?
I got a couple. Let's tear them up.
Yeah, let's tear them up.
Let's have a debate.
All right.
Go ahead. No, it's your turn.
All right. Now, we're talking about the clean campaign. It certainly is going to be an interesting one. Do you feel that it'll be real clean, Mr. Hall, or will it be a little mudslinging?
Well, I tell you, we met the other day to sign a pledge for fair practices in a campaign, and while he was signing it, I think Paul threw the pledge into the waste paper basket.
No, I didn't. You threw it in 1954 into the waste basket, and I merely reminded you of it.
He threw it in the waste paper basket. Now, we intend to run this campaign and to tell to the American people what has happened in this country in the last 3.5 years. We're going to contrast it with what happened during the Truman administration. I may say, Paul, I got a book here. It's called The Truman Scandals. Now, if you want to get ready for some alibis, I'll give you a copy.
You don't need it. What about the Eisenhower scandals?
There are no scandals.
What about Secretary Talbot? And what about the former chairman of the Republican National Committee? What about the man who made his contracts for his clients during his lunch hour while he was supposed to be serving the interests of the United States?
May I say this, Paul?
What about Dixon Yates?
You have just expressed what, in my opinion, the people want to hear. The big difference
I'll say
between,
the people want to hear, and they're going to find
the
out
big
about
difference, Mr. Hall, go
The
ahead,
big
Mr.
difference
Hall.
Between your administrations and ours is this. When something is found out to be wrong, we clean it up. We don't cover it up. We don't shout red herring. We don't say nothing is wrong. Now, you've mentioned 2 or 3 cases. Without going into the situation at all, you have to concede Those men are out of office, and nobody rushed to the papers and radio and yelled, it was red herring. No, you've got a different picture today.
You've swept more under the carpet in 3.5 years in this administration than has been swept under in 52 years of all the former administrations
century. That's a nice statement to make, Ben. You know you can't prove it. But that's the type of statement that you're going to use calling this a clean campaign. May I say this? If we're going to measure the cleanliness of our campaign by the language you've just used and by the language that Mr. Truman uses, we've got a pretty broad area in which we can work. But I want to assure the people of one thing. We're not going to take advantage of the area that you give us to work in because we're going to keep this campaign out of the gutter and on a very high level.
Well, I'm certainly happy that you're changing your tune from 1954 when the Vice President of the United States and Senator McCarthy and others were going around assailing the integrity and the honesty and the patriotism of many great Americans in our
party. Well, may I say this, Paul? Of course, we have senators and we have congressmen, and sometimes they will say some things that we disagree with. For instance, I don't think you'd want to stand here today and take full responsibility for what Senator Eastland has said about the Supreme Court, would you?
Do you want to take responsibility for what Howard Pyle said the other day, the presidential assistant out in Detroit?
Don't you think...
Talking about the right of the American people to have to suffer?
Don't you think...
The fifth freedom.
Don't you think it's nice, however, and refreshing that after that was called to his attention, he apologized? I think that's refreshed. Wait a minute.
But all too late. Does that correct the insult to a great many American people who are suffering today from unemployment?
Mr. Hall, go ahead.
Paul, may I say this? I think it's refreshing when you contrast it with a great figure in your party who every time he's caught saying something, he says, no, I didn't say it. I repudiate the statement. I think Howard Pyle did a great American thing. He made a mistake, and he apologized
Howard
for it.
Howard Pyle is not a private citizen. He's a spokesman for the president and a member of his staff.
And Harry Truman's your titular leader.
He comes from the staff of the same president who, in 1948, down in Texas, said if the American people want Social Security, they can find it in prison.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
This is the heart. This is the policy. This is the philosophy of this administration.
Is it?
It doesn't have any heart or any understanding of the needs of the people.
I think concerned only
with profits.
I think that the people will get an idea of what Mr. Butler calls a clean campaign. All we have to do, Paul, is to look at the figures. We can show you the greatest economy we ever had. We can show you that the average wage earner is enjoying that prosperity more under Mr. Eisenhower than he ever did under
true.
Mr. Truman.
That is true. The average pay of the weekly wage earner, the wage earner in the factories of our country, went up over $12 a week. Under the last three and a half years of Harry Truman, and they've only gone
Paul.
Up $7 under this administration.
I wonder, Paul.
These are the facts, though.
Do you believe in what the facts show, or do you just want to talk about something that comes out of some kind of machine where you get the figures? The facts are, and you can't disprove it, that today wages are higher than they were under war days.
Certainly they are, and the costs of living have eaten up the rates under this administration.
Now, I hate to say this, because I think we ought to keep this on a good level basis.
Wait a minute, Paul. Go ahead, Mr. Hall.
You disprove these facts. The cost of living went up 12% in the last 3 years of Mr. Truman's administration, and the cost of living in the 3.5 years under President Eisenhower have stayed just like that. I want you to disprove that.
No, that isn't true.
That is true.
You know it isn't true.
I know it's true.
The cost of food has not gone up, but the cost of domestic household services and of utilities and of rent and everything else. You took the controls off of rent, and all of these things have gone up and eaten up the small income and increased earnings of these wage earners. But are you taking credit?
Wait a minute.
Are you taking credit for the increased earnings of the wage earners of America?
I am saying that they are enjoying the prosperity which we've had during the past 3.5 years.
And who created that prosperity?
And the Eisenhower administration with peace in the world.
With peace.
But wait a minute.
2.5 million people still in arms.
I want to pick
$36 billion being spent, and we have peacetime economy.
Go ahead, Mr. Hall.
May I say this, Paul? We ought to get one point settled here, and I want the American people to judge whether you're here telling the truth. Now, you are saying, let's get it straight, that the cost of living, now that includes a lot of items. That's everything that goes into the cost of living. Are you saying here today that the cost of living didn't go up 12% under Mr. Truman, and that it has stayed on a course where it hasn't fluctuated
1%. I did not say that it did not go up under Mr. Truman, but the income of the average wage earner went up. in greater proportion than the cost of living increase, and that has not been true in the last 3.5 years.
I won't use my own words to disprove what you've just said. I'll take the words of George Meany last year, I think it was down in Miami, Paul, where he said, for the first time in years, we are now getting a wage increase, which is a real wage increase because it isn't a wage increase to meet the cost of living. Now, that's Mr. George Meany, head of the combined AFL-CIO. Now, do you say he was telling an
untruth? Mr. Meany and Walter Reuther and other great men in the labor movement today are responsible for the increases.
Do you say that Mr. Meany was telling an untruth?
No, I didn't say that he was.
Well, then
it's his judgment of the thing. But what's happened in the last 16 or 18 months since he made that statement?
The situation is just the same. The cost of living is staying completely in balance.
Well, then the Washington Star isn't giving the people the facts. I see that the food prices themselves up in the last week went up 0.2%.
Maybe you could pick out one item here and there, but I'm talking about taking the complete picture. And if you want to be intellectually honest, you've got to accept the figure that the cost of living is on a level.
The American people who are listening in today know whether they're better off under this administration, individually, man for man and woman for woman.
And you're going to find out
in
November 1956.
And what was the condition of our economy when we got through with the last Republican president in 1932?
Well, I tell you, we ought to go back to Cleveland, too.
Uh-huh. Well, let's not go back that far, gentlemen. Let's stay with the conditions as it is now, because this is 1956, and let me ask you this. Since it is 1956, and I understand a great deal of television will be used in this campaign, how extensively will you use television, Mr. Butler?
Well, I think that we will use television as extensively. I started to say expensively, and it is a very expensive media by which to get to the American people, except when we have public-spirited programs like this that invite Mr. Hall and me to participate in a discussion. But we will use it as widely as we possibly can in the limited finances of the Party of the People. We don't have the millions that are available to Mr. Hall's party.
Mr. Hall, how do you plan on using television?
We are going to use television as much as we can. In fact, we've contracted for a lot of it. And I want to say, Steve, I'm happy up here stating to you that I'm not confessing that I'm the chairman of a bankrupt organization. From all I can hear from Mr. Butler and what I have heard in the past several months, he's the head of a bankrupt organization. We're going to use television. We think it's the modern media, radio and television. We think we should use the modern methods, and television offers us that method.
Mr. Hall is very facetious about his bankrupt party. We're not bankrupt in spirit or heart or the will to win or the confidence in the American people to surmount the problems that confront them. And they're going to do it in the next 4 years under a Democratic administration, even if we don't have the money to put on the kind of a stage show that you put on during the campaign with Mr. Montgomery, Robert Montgomery, and others directing the whole pictorial scene.
Paul, of course, you don't like to say here, maybe you won't put on all of the broadcasts of your candidate for president, whoever he may be, and by the way, you may enlighten us on that, but if you go back to 1952, while your organization did not put the candidate on every time, he appeared on television on half-hour shows, and it seems to me that some labor organizations bought the time for him. So when we're talking about television time that your candidate is going to use, I think that there again you should be fair with the American people that even though you may not spend it, your candidate under other sponsorship, if like 52, will appear on television quite frequently.
No, he won't appear on television as much as your candidate because I understand that you've already contracted for 15 one-half-hour shows during the next campaign. Now, as a matter of fact, we're going to take our candidate to the people. He's going to cross the country and meet the people and shake hands with them and talk about the problems that confront the American people today.
Is he going to have another debate?
He's not going to sit on his front porch.
Are we going to have another powder puff situation like we had down in Florida the other
night? If you want a debate, I asked you before, some months ago, just before President Eisenhower announced he was going to run again, challenged you to have your candidate, the President of the United States, indulge in a debate or engage in a debate with the Democratic candidate for the enlightenment of the American people, and you refuse.
That's wonderful on your part, isn't it? That's wonderful on your part.
Certainly, the American people have a right to be informed, and I say that it's the duty of the President of the United States to debate his opponent.
Oh, you did?
Yes, whether Sherman Hall or Mr. Hagerty.
Did you recommend that to Mr. Roosevelt, Mr. Truman?
There was no television in those days. I was not the chairman of the Democratic Party.
You were chairman out in Indiana?
No, I was not. I was never state chairman. No, I was never chairman.
Well, any great gentleman, in case they do want to debate, I might be the first to offer the facilities of the American Forum to carry on as you're both doing.
May I say this? I think we should have two great parties.
and I think we'll become very unhealthy in the United States if each party and its candidate can't stand on their own feet. I'm for two parties, strong, both standing on their own feet and not putting on a crybaby.
And may I say, Mr. McCormick, on behalf of the Democratic Party, that the Democratic nominee will accept your invitation to appear on a debate on NBC under the auspices of the American Forum of the Air and debate, Mr. Eisenhower. Now let you answer that, Mr.
Well,
McCormick.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. As far as I'm concerned, it won't be accepted.
I didn't think it would be.
Now let's move along, if we may, to a few other things. May I ask this one? How will the civil rights question affect the chances of your party, Mr. Hall?
Well, of course, I have to go back a moment to my years in Congress. I was there 14 years. During that time, the Democratic Party had tremendous control of both houses of Congress. I sat there and saw Democratic votes kill anti-lynching bills and anti-poll tax bills. Again, not to quote Len Hall or anyone else, let's pick up a Democrat and quote him. Adam Clayton Powell said, so after this administration was in power, that in 20 months, this administration had done more on the question of civil rights than the other administration had done in 20 years.
Did you see
Quoting another famous figure, Mr. Ralph Bunche. Mr. Bunche said that he wouldn't take a job in Washington during the Truman days because he couldn't get a decent place in which to live. Today, he said he'd be proud to come to Washington. I think those statements speak louder than anything I could say.
Mr. Butler.
Why don't you quote Adam Clayton Powell on his most recent statement about this administration, where he says that discrimination in the armed forces is coming to a head again, and it's worse today than it was at any time in the past 3.5 years.
Well, gentlemen, with fast-changing conditions in the world today, can a candidate make promises in an election year and keep them 100%?
A candidate can make promises and keep them. Now, for instance, I'll give you an idea of what I mean by that. 6 months ago, when we were on some program, Paul was saying, "Where's the balanced budget?" I didn't hear it today. We have a balanced budget. If you will look at what the...
Where is the budget balanced?
It is balanced right today, and the committees up on the Hill say there'll be a surplus of $2 billion, I think it is.
That's the administration that said that.
That's your committee up on
your
the Hill.
Your administration's claiming $1.8 billion, but they've got to produce it for the American
All you have
people.
To do is check what we promised in 1952 and look at the accomplishments, how those promises have been kept, and I think you will find that this administration measures up very, very well... overwhelmingly against any Democratic administration.
Mr. Butler.
Mr. McCormick, that statement's very interesting in the light of all the promises that were made in 1952. Of course, campaign promises can be made and can be kept if the person who is making them has the responsibility of knowing the facts before he makes any promises. And never before in the history of our country did any candidate for the president promise as many things on as many subjects as Dwight Eisenhower did in the campaign of 1952.
That's a nice general statement, but nothing specific.
And he certainly has not produced on either a balanced budget or lowering taxes or reduction of the national debt. Instead, we've had two increases of the national debt. And we've had all kinds of scandal in this government under this administration.
Mr. Hall.
Let's get a couple of facts straight. By reason of the economies in this administration, there has been a tax reduction of $7.5 billion.
Not under this administration.
By reason
that
of
was
the,
voted by a Democratic Congress
Mr. Hall,
and
Mr.
signed
Hall.
By Harry Truman.
That tax reduction came about in this administration by reason of the economies made. And number two, the question now is not whether the budget is balanced, Paul, but by what amount we have a surplus. So why don't you be honest with the people when we're talking to them about tax reduction and about the balanced budget? You know it's balanced today as of today.
You promised tax reduction for the average wage earner, the average person of average income.
We
in the
promised
country.
A
you
tax
haven't produced it.
We said there'd
reduced
be a,
taxes
wait a minute.
To the corporations
we,
and the people with
we
big
We have
income.
Said there would be a tax reduction when it could well be done in the economy of the country. The biggest one in history took place during this administration. And, Paul, you don't like it, but it happened during this administration.
You cannot fool the American people on that, Mr. Hall, because that tax reduction was not did not originate under this administration.
Yes,
it was passed by the last Democratic Congress and signed by Harry Truman.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Butler. Do you think if Mr. Truman's budget that he handed over to this administration had been adopted by the Congress of the United States in that figure that you could have had a tax reduction?
Certainly,
of course
certainly
you
it could have
had.
Been accomplished.
You know that as
certainly
well as
it could have been
you're
accomplished.
Sitting here
this
today.
Administration hasn't accomplished. If you do come up with a balanced budget and you haven't arrived at a point yet, $1 billion of that balanced budget, if any surplus that may arise, is should be credited to Congressman Zelenko, a Democrat of New York,
who found
that loophole in the Republican Republican 83rd Congress
here,
tax
here
bill. You
again.
Remember. Secretary Humphrey
Paul,
himself.
Paul, we have, Paul, Let's keep the record straight. This administration made promises. It has kept them. And may I say this, too? We're going to the people on the record that the president's made. I think he is still working for peace. He is still very, very popular in the minds of all the people of this country because he has kept this nation at peace and at the same time given us a great prosperity. And, Paul, I'm willing to lay that record on the line, and I hope that all Democratic speakers who go out during this next campaign are just as extravagant with the truth and the facts as you have been
if
here
you're
today,
willing, if you're
because
willing
we'll
to,
have nothing to fear.
If you're Mr. willing Butler. To lay it on the line then, Mr. Hall, then why don't you have President Eisenhower debate the Democratic nominee
because,
on television so the American people can make their own appraisal of the situation?
For this reason, Paul, I don't think the Republican Party will ever let the Democratic Party pick the forum where we speak.
Oh, what about the American people picking the forum?
The American people indicated a complete satisfaction with the Eisenhower campaign in 1952. In my opinion, they'll express the same satisfaction in 1956.
Yes, it's one thing for the President of the United States to speak to the American people on television, directed by Robert Montgomery of Hollywood and all those things, but it's another thing meeting his opponent in a face-to-face debate and a head-on discussion of the issues that confront the American people.
You know that.
And you know that you're afraid to do it.
You don't even press that sincerely.
I do press it sincerely. The American people will support us on that contention, too, and you and your candidate won't go on through.
Well, Paul,
you're afraid to face up to the American people on the issues of this campaign.
Paul, we'll meet after Election Day, and I know as a good American you will say, well, we'll wholeheartedly support the administration of Dwight D. Eisenhower.
We certainly have made a fine record on that in the Congress.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry. I must.
Intelligent opposition to this administration.
I must interrupt.
Democratic leadership.
I'm terribly sorry I must interrupt. I'd like this to go on for at least another hour and a half, but I find that our time is up. Our guests today have been, and we thank them very much, Leonard Hull, Chairman of the Republican National Committee, and Paul Butler, Chairman of the Democratic National Committee. The nation's first discussion program, the American Forum, is now in its 28th year, founded and produced by Theodore Granick. This is Steve McCormick bidding you goodbye.
Listen again next week at our regular time when the American Forum will present another discussion of importance to you. For reprints of today's discussion on the American Forum, send 10 cents to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington 18, D.C. America's oldest unrehearsed discussion program is dedicated to the public debate of all sides of all issues vital to you and your country. The American Forum is produced by its founder, Theodore Granick, directed by Rene Martichelle. This program came to you from the NBC studios in Washington. This is Lee Dayton speaking. This has been an NBC presentation. Thank you, gentlemen, for a most stimulating discussion. We'll be looking forward to monitoring you again next week. And now, as usual at this point, a brief word, if I may. A very good listening bet during the weekdays is the program with that very name, Weekday. In this coming week, for example, you'll hear Alfred Hitchcock, James Cagney, Irving Berlin, Doris Day, Jane Pickens reports on her holiday tour of Europe's waterways, Helen Hayes joins in, and many others. Make it a weekday habit, and you'll find the chores of the day are lighter than you thought. Thank you. Monitor continues in just a moment.